This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello and welcome to Market Talk, our regular update on the big events currently moving financial markets. My name is Harry. I'm a content manager in L&G's asset management business based in London. And as always, I'm delighted to be joined by Ben Bennett, Head of Investment Strategy Asia, who's based in Hong Kong. How have you been, Ben?
I'm very well, thanks, Harry. I'm back in Hong Kong. I've been following in President Trump's footsteps. Last week, he was in the Middle East. I was in the Middle East, actually, earlier this week. And it's been pretty hot in the Middle East. It's 40 degrees currently there, so it makes coming back to Hong Kong sort of 32 degrees seem like we're entering a fridge. Still pretty Excellent. Hot here, actually, to be fair, but it's a lot better.
We're glad to have you back. In my intro, I promised an update on the biggest events in markets. So let's start with what's perhaps the biggest story of the past couple of weeks, really, which is the easing of trade tensions between the US and China. We saw big gains in US stock markets following the announcement of a preliminary deal last Monday. And I think the S&P is now higher than it was at the start of the year. Does that, on the face of it, suggest that whatever economic harm investors were worried about as a result of the Liberation Day tariffs has now been undone?
I've been thinking about Liberation Day and I guess the motivations behind it, the shifting perception of those motivations. I mean, it's hard to know exactly what the trigger was, what the idea was behind it. But I think right at the beginning, the initial announcement of Liberation Day, when the president held up those boards with the huge tariffs on there, the concern was that the desire was to end all global trade, in effect, you know, keep tariffs to a level high enough that it would really restrict trade, bring all manufacturing, I guess, back to the US. I mean, that's an extreme, but maybe that was really the motivation behind it. And then we had pretty quickly after that the end of the postponement of the reciprocal tariffs. But yet the president left very large tariffs on China. So, okay, so maybe it wasn't about bringing back all trade into the US, but maybe it was about China. Maybe it was about singling out China, trying to move manufacturing away from China, maybe to India or Vietnam, or as well, of course, back to the US. But then we also had just recently the agreement, the deal with China that again brings back those tariffs down to still relatively high levels, but not to levels that would totally restrict trade between the US and China. So it's not about restricting trade with everyone. It's not about restricting trade purely with China. So the final conclusion, I think, which is what most investors are coming to, is that it's about keeping trade going, maybe at the margin bringing some back to the US, but keeping trade going and raising revenue off that trade. And then that revenue can be used to cut taxes potentially. And that is a much more positive scenario for investing in equity markets, isn't it? Because it's no longer very disruptive. It's potentially going to lead to a little bit more manufacturing in the US and a little bit more tax cuts. So as you say, the S&P, it reached a peak in February of I think 6,144, if I've got my numbers right. Then it closed on the 2nd of April, just before Liberation Day, at 5,670. So that was a bit of a drop off. And then it, of course, went down further after Liberation Day, but it's recovered all the way back up to just about 6,000 again. Not quite up to that 6,144 in February, but recovered a fair chunk of the downside risks and, yeah, pretty much close to the altar. And a lot of other indices outside of the US are at the highs that we've seen of the year as well. And it's not just been about the trade and the perception of that trade. Also, I mentioned the Middle East, didn't I, before, and President Trump going to the Middle East doing deals. That boosted some specific sectors and names as well. But a lot is now in the price, I guess. That's the issue.
It's interesting, since the tariffs were first announced, I feel like I've lost count of the number of times that I've read about investors being wrong-footed by the pace of development, surprised in one way or another. Presumably, though, after a while, investors get used to a period of heightened policy uncertainty. Do you think the way that markets are reacting to whatever new message is coming out of the US leadership is changing, or are we still tending to see this sort of oscillation between jubilation and despair?
Yeah, there's not a lot of patience with investors sometimes, is there? I mean, I just described some of those. Maybe it's like the stages of grief, isn't it? Earlier, the stages of trying to work out what's going on with Liberation Day and the Times. To be fair, it's only taken a few weeks, and you get these bouts of volatility. It's not that unusual, is it? And maybe if we get to the final, more positive result, then you know the journey's been worthwhile, hasn't it? But thinking again more broadly about the path, I think when President Trump was elected the first time around in 2016, I think investors were wary about what he would do. Equity markets reacted initially with some concern, but then as President Trump's policies were enacted, there was quite a lot of focus, wasn't there, on tax cuts, deregulation, which was a very positive market reaction. Equity markets did pretty well during President Trump's first term. And this time around, I think investors were just extrapolating that positivity right at the beginning. As soon as President Trump was elected, there was a positive reaction, wasn't there? That positivity in markets. And then we had the tariffs and this sort of question mark, oh, maybe there's something else going on here. And the sort of collective, well, maybe we got this wrong. Maybe it's not quite as positive as last year. But, you know, as I said now, it feels as though that's starting to... that concern is fading away and we're starting to get back into the focus on those tax cuts. So it's been, as you say, quite a whipsaw. I think with such uncertainty, what it pays to do sometimes is to push against when you see too much confidence across the consensus, the investors. When you see too many headlines that are very positive or too many headlines that are very negative, it usually isn't quite as extreme as that, isn't it? And it's usually quite sensible to push against it. In our asset allocation team, for example, we were underweight sort of equity credit risk, the mix of risky assets. We were underweight at the start of the year just because we thought it was probably a little bit too much positivity in markets. And then we bought into the sell-off after Liberation Day because, again, maybe people were getting a bit too worried. But now we've gone back again to being a little bit underweight because perhaps there's too much positivity around. So it's that sort of contrarian trading that can sometimes do quite well when it is so uncertain, when consensus confidence is a little bit misplaced, perhaps.
If you can keep your head while those about you are losing theirs, I guess. Okay, well, sticking with the US, should we take a look at the US government bond market where there's been a sell-off going on? From what I've seen, the latest rise in 30-year treasury yields came amid a credit rating downgrade from Moody's and broader kind of concerns about the country's debt burden. What's been going on?
It's been a bit of a perfect storm for US government bonds. Actually, over the last few weeks, we've had still some sticky inflation. Inflation has been coming down gradually over the last couple of years, but it is feeling a bit sticky now. The last mile seems to be the hardest. And if you do put tariffs in place, that generally does increase import prices, doesn't it? There's also this mixture of worries about US exceptionalism. I mean, I mentioned all the investors moving around and getting concerned and now getting too confident. But I guess if you sum it all together, that the confidence maybe at the end of last year that the US was going to outperform everything and you just wanted to invest in the US, AI investment's going to be brilliant in the US. Well, that's taken a little bit of a hit, that confidence. So some of that has impacted US treasuries. I think positioning and sentiment at the start of the year, as I said, people were a little bit too confident about the US. We've also got this spending bill going through the US government, which could involve extension of President Trump's first, when he was the first in power, tax cuts, then could be other tax cuts. We don't know exactly what's going to come out of this, but it could result in more fiscal easing, which would mean even more supply of treasuries. That's not good for the price of treasuries, is it? And then finally, I think it's also worth bearing in mind that in a world where inflation is quite high, treasuries are no longer quite as good a hedge as they have been for your equity position. Usually when you buy equities, you want to buy treasuries as well. If there's a recession, your equities will do pretty poorly, but at least you've got those treasuries and they should do really well as yields fall. But if inflation's quite sticky, that dynamic doesn't work. We saw that in 2022, sort of everything sells off. And if the hedge isn't working so well, then multi-asset funds may be reducing some of those treasury positions because they don't need them anymore. And again, that's weighing on treasury prices. Finally, I think you said the trigger of that Moody's AAA cut on Friday. I don't think that's very important in itself, but maybe it's just putting things in people's minds, isn't it? So yeah, you add that all together and we've seen yields going up. So the 30-year US Treasury, it's really been at the long end of the Treasury curve that's been impacted. That's flirting with 5% yields. We've seen that a few times over the last couple of years, that 5% yields. It hasn't breached that, hasn't gone beyond that, but it could do this time. And actually, that's the way that we think in our positioning, that the risk is that actually those yields continue to go up, because it's hard for more, everything I've just described. It's hard to see how the momentum shifts. And very different too, as an aside, the first rating agency to cut the AAA rating for the US was S&P back in 2011. I don't know if our listeners have been in markets long enough to remember what happened then, but it was a much different market reaction then. It was very much a risk off. Everyone was a bit panicked about US losing AAA. What does that mean? What sort of other investments are going to go wrong? And the S&P, the equity markets, fell quite a lot on the back of that. And actually, Treasuries rallied because it was seen as a safe haven. The reaction this time around has been almost totally the opposite. The Treasury yields have been selling off. So yields have been going up. Prices of Treasuries have been going down because people are being a bit more worried about the fiscal sustainability of the US, not about risk assets.
So last time we caught up a couple of weeks back now, we talked a bit about US dollar weakness and the idea that the dollar's esteemed status really is the safe haven of choice is gradually coming under pressure. You sort of downplayed the most recent Moody's downgrade, but does that kind of fit this narrative of the dollar being under longer term pressure?
Well, I guess I want to be clear about the way that we're thinking about this US exceptionalism trade. So because it's all about this, right? It's all about perhaps the US is going to underperform going forward from an equity perspective. Perhaps you don't want to buy as many dollar denominated assets if President Trump is looking to tariff lots of other people. Maybe the US is looking a bit vulnerable there, and the dollar as well. If everyone's reducing their exposure to equities, to treasuries, the dollar, that's the dollar denominated assets, the dollar could fall too. We certainly think from what I've just described that treasury yields could go high, but that's more just because there's going to be a lot of issuance of treasuries because of this fiscal deficit. If you look at equity markets or the dollar, I think that it's not quite as obvious that this trend could continue. The dollar, the DXY index, is down 9% so far this year as to when we're taping today on the 21st of May. Roughly 9%. That's a big move. Can it go further? Can it depreciate further? It could do, I suppose. But there's not much alternative for the dollar as the global currency. There really isn't. I do think that 9% move has been exacerbated by that positioning and sentiment at the beginning of the year. Everyone loved the dollar. Everyone was positioned long the dollar at the beginning of the year. Maybe that 9% move is just an unwind of that. And again, in our multi-asset portfolios, we're actually pushing against this move a little bit. We started the year underweight dollars in a few of our trades, and the weakness in the dollar has been an opportunity to cover some of those underweight positions. So again, we're looking to go against the move there, as opposed to the treasury move, which we think could continue. We think yields could go up, but we think that the dollar, maybe that's that the 9% fall is enough.
So sticking with currencies, but moving from the US to Asia, I see something interesting has been going on with the Hong Kong dollar recently. Normally, I think the yield on this currency is broadly similar to whatever the US dollar yield is, but a big gap opened up recently. What was behind that, and did it create opportunities for investors?
Nice, I get to talk about Hong Kong, so where I live. But I said earlier, sort of sanguine about the US dollar general moves. But the problem is when things move like a serious amount, sort of 9% in a few months, which is quite a lot for the dollar, you can see volatility start to spike in areas that perhaps you weren't looking at. And actually, the Taiwanese dollar was a good example of that a couple of weeks ago, where we saw a big appreciation of the Taiwanese dollar. Looks as though some local life insurance companies in Taiwan were having to scramble to hedge some of their their long US dollar positions that were getting quite weak, and they were having to quickly scramble and sell those and buy some Taiwanese dollar. Actually, Jason Tan has written a great LNG blog about about what was happening there and what he thinks about that. That's definitely worth a read. The Hong Kong dollar peg is also very interesting. So the Hong Kong dollar is pegged to the US dollar. But as the US dollar was weakening, the Hong Kong Monetary Authority was having to intervene to try and maintain that peg. So they were having to sell loads of Hong Kong dollars into the market to buy US dollars to try and weaken the Hong Kong dollar. It was getting too strong. But what happens if you push loads of Hong Kong dollars in the market, that those Hong Kong dollars have to find a home. So what we saw is that those dollars were buying sort of short-dated yields. The three-month Hong Kong bond yield fell from over 3% to under 1.5% in a few days, really. So the big fall in local yields. And if this continues, you can see that liquidity sloshing around, and it can find homes in all sorts of assets, not just bond yields. It could prop up the local equity markets. It could lead to higher property prices. That's always something that people talk about in Hong Kong, like in a lot of other countries too. So yeah, basically there are implications to some of this volatility that we've seen. It's worth keeping an eye on and just making sure nothing breaks.
So having covered what's going on in your backyard, I guess we can turn to mine for a moment. This morning, the UK's Office for National Statistics released inflation data for April, and it showed the annual rate of inflation had jumped up to 3.5%. So bad news for consumers. What does it mean about the possible path of UK interest rates, though?
This was quite an important inflation print because April data is when it's the end of the fiscal year. Now, I think a lot of people that own businesses or go to restaurants will see prices change potentially once a year, maybe at the beginning of the year, January the 1st, but often it's around this April time because it's the fiscal year. So it's almost that these numbers, these data will have a disproportionately important impact because you can get these big jumps. And as you say, we did see surprisingly high jumps, a little bit higher than expected. Core inflation was also a little bit higher, sort of went up to nearly 4%. The service sector inflation is probably the one area that is of most concern, near sort of 5.4% service sector inflation. It's not a great backdrop to be cutting interest rates, is it? So the Bank of England is sort of cutting interest rates 25 basis points roughly once a quarter. They cut last month. So, you know, the idea would be that they would cut twice more the rest of this year. So a 25 basis point cut, twice more, maybe in August and then once at the end of the year. These data suggest that they might not be able, the risk is that they won't be able to do both of those cuts. Maybe they do one of those cuts and not the other. And certainly it doesn't look like they would accelerate that cutting process. So it looks like it's unlikely that they cut in June. And it would also be unlikely that they raise the pace of this cutting from 25 to 50 basis points. So, yeah, still probably they cut twice more this year, but the risk is that they just do one.
Well, as always on Market Talk, I want to give you the chance, Ben, to discuss anything that might be flying under investors' radars, or perhaps I just missed off my list of questions. With that in mind, what's your number of the week, Ben?
Well, I've already spoken about temperatures that I've been subjected to this week. That could be a large number, but so let's talk about markets instead of that. Let's do 5.3%. And I haven't spoken about corporate bonds really for a little while. And it's just worth bearing in mind that this increase in treasury yields makes, I guess, bonds more attractive, doesn't it? Yields going forward, that's what you get as an investor. And 5.3% is the yield on the US investment grade credit index. Again, it's interesting just how far that has gone up. Most of that is the underlying government bond yield. So you could just buy government bonds, of course, and get a fair chunk of that. But you get a little bit extra spread for credit. High yield is 7.5%. So that's pretty high. So just putting that in context, though, the 5.3 for investment grade credit, that peaked at 6.4, the recent peak anyway, 6.4% in 2023. But it was also below 2% in 2021. So you could have bought it. People were buying it 4 years ago at under 2% yield. And now it's at 5.3. It's not far away from what it was at the peak a couple of years ago. So from an asset allocation perspective, you do have to look at that. And that's one of the reasons why yields cannot continue going up forever, because at some point they become so attractive and they'll be bought. So, yeah, just bearing in mind that these moves are providing some more attractive yields for investors, and that could start to impact investor flows.
Well, thanks so much for your time today, Ben. It's been an absolute pleasure, as it always is. And thank you to all our listeners too.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues, or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against L&G in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information. Not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to L&G, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities, Undertaking for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities Regulations 2011 as amended, and as an Alternative Investment Fund Manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.